Hey, I'm Jeremy Loeb with WCQS News. You're about to hear the full remarks given by Chelsea Clinton in what was billed as a clean energy roundtable event at the Collider in downtown Asheville that took place on Wednesday, September 28th, 2016.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much. Thank you for the warm welcome, Mr. Commissioner. I also want to thank your terrific mayor for being with us today, so please give her a round of applause. And everyone here at the Collider, including Mac Pearsall, Kathy Peterson, and everyone who worked so hard to enable all of us to fit into this room. And I know there are actually more of us here than could fit into the room, so although I can't hear you, I am told you can hear me, so hello to the overflow room. Please give... Oh, yes! Great! I don't really even know which direction to look in, because all of a sudden we very much felt like you were all with us. I am thrilled to be back here in this just gorgeous part of North Carolina. I had the chance to come here in 2008, and I'm just very thankful that my mom's campaign has brought me back once again. I thought I could almost just sort of fade into the background while Brownie was speaking. He made so many of the points that I was looking forward to sharing with all of you. But I don't mind that. I think that means that we're on the right team together. And I was really proud of my mom Monday night in the debate. And proud that she brought up climate change as both an urgent threat and an opportunity for our country. And so just to kind of flesh out a little bit what Brownie shared, and then I'll open up the floor to your questions or thoughts that you may have. I want to say, though, I think the leadership that you have at the local level here demonstrates why it's so important to not only pay attention to politics every 4 years, because it really matters who is elected at the national, state, and local levels, particularly when we are talking about challenges and opportunities like climate change and clean energy, where we need strong, coordinated leadership at every level. And so before I talk a little bit about my mom's plans, I want to share kind of why I feel so intensely that's true when we're talking about kind of these questions. The first organizations I ever joined were the World Wildlife Fund, Conservation International, and Greenpeace. And I joined them thanks to my grandmother, who told me when I was a little girl, like seven, I think, that she was no longer going to give me a kind of tangible gift for Christmas. She was going to give me a membership to an organization that I really believed in and that I wanted to be part of helping to support their work. And so it was really exciting. She would give me these annual memberships, and I would get mail every month. Oh, my gosh. I'm, like, looking at the people in the audience who are younger than I am, and you're like, mail. Yes, mail. I would get mail, the old-fashioned paper kind, kind of giving me updates about kind of what the work was doing and suggestions that were targeted to me as an elementary school kid about what I could do. And so I obsessively cut up the plastic rings around soda cans so that, you're laughing, but I was very serious about this, so that kind of my trash from Arkansas wasn't gonna kill marine wildlife on the Gulf Coast. And I was part of the effort, kind of led by my fifth grade teachers at the time to start our school's first recycling program. And I remember being so proud that our mayor kind of took this question seriously, partly because there were so many kids, and I was just one of them, that put this on the agenda for Little Rock kind of in the 1980s. And I share that story because I'm often asked, as I kind of am lucky enough to do events like this across the country, questions about what my mom will do as president on fill in the blank. And as I answer them, I try to say, this is what a president can and can't do. Because if we really want to make progress on this, we need visionary, strong, progressive leadership like you have here in your county commissioner and your mayor to ensure that hopefully while the president is doing what she should be doing. We're making progress at the local level. So I just am so grateful to be here, and I'm going to talk about Asheville a lot. But before opening it up to your questions, I do want to just expound a bit on what you heard. As my mom said in the debate, and as she has said throughout this campaign, and as she said from her position as our Secretary of State, she believes that some country will be the energy superpower of the 21st century. And she thinks it should be us, particularly given our kind of ingenuity, as I'm sure those of you who are part of the Collider community are being part of kind of that catalytic energy every day. But we know we need the federal government to make investments to help us achieve that and to help set bold goals to kind of galvanize our progress in specific directions. So my mom has said she thinks we should have $500 million net new solar panels by the end of her first term. And given what you kind of heard from Brownie, and I saw some of your eyes went up, you didn't know that solar energy was our fastest growing form of energy in the United States, but it is, and so we should be kind of capitalizing on that trend. And she believes that by the end of a decade, we should be generating enough power from renewable sources in our country so that every home can be powered from renewable energy. And we know that to do that, we have to be making broad-based investments across our country. We need to be making investments in community colleges and higher education and partnering community colleges and higher education institutions with local businesses. We need to be investing in coal country to help coal country be part of the clean energy revolution in our country, to respect the work and the labor of communities who helped power our country for so long so that they can continue to be part of that tradition. We have to make investments in our infrastructure, both because we need to for public health and safety reasons. The Army Corps of Engineers says conservatively we have about 1,000 bridges that could be structurally unsound by 2030. That's not that long from today. But also because that level of materials need in a real sense creates a lot of demand for much further progress than we've made so far. And what should green cement look like? Should it even be green? I don't know. You're going to laugh, but we need to be asking and answering those questions, because while we often focus on kind of power generation, we know that we need greener buildings and structures to ensure that we are being power smart into the future. And it matters to me that my mom really understands the role of the federal government in helping to set big goals and to making targeted investments to support and unleash ingenuity, but that she also knows she needs strong partners like you have here in this community at the local level. It's one of the reasons I was so excited to talk about National Voter Registration Day yesterday, because it gave me the chance to make the case about why it's so important to get registered in this election, because I do believe everything that I care about is at risk, but also to talk about how important it is to be engaged citizens for every election. So I hope that I'll just keep being able to make that argument, and specifically to advocate on behalf of my mom as much as I can in as many places as I can across North Carolina and around our country between now and Election Day. And I think that questions related to climate change and investing in our clean energy future are some of the most critical questions in this election and are too often not being addressed. So I hope that events like this help bring attention to what I think we should be talking about in this election, because it has huge implications for our future. It's one of the many things I didn't know I could care more about until I became a parent and found that I could, because I don't want my children to grow up in a world that looks very different than our world, where the Blue Ridge Mountains that you're so blessed to live so close to, whole ecosystems may be destroyed. That is not
the future that I want for my children, even if they're never so lucky to come here. But don't worry, we'll bring them here. So really, just thank you all so much. And please, I hope you'll ask questions. And I hope you will kind of share thoughts and advice as relates to clean energy or anything. And I see some people here who are definitely too young to vote. But I hope that you won't be dissuaded. If you have questions, I hope you'll ask them, because you then ensure that we never forget this election is first and foremost about the future. So some of you are already raising your hands, but before I call on anyone, please just give our hosts here at the Collider a big round of applause. So, yes, sir, I saw your hand first.
The tremendous effort that y'all put in with the deep renovation and retrofit of the iconic Empire State Building, and the work to reduce by, I think, at least 60% in the first round, the amount of electricity and water while actually making that building that, you know, Cary Grant was in a movie starring the Empire State Building, and we'll never have another one of those. But the family commitment on behalf of the environment goes back so many years, even to when y'all were in Arkansas, and I just want to thank you for that. It's a beautiful, beautiful
thing. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. I saw your hand next. Yes, ma'am, with the glasses. Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't know your name, so glasses, hair color will be identifying.
That's fine. What plans specifically, if there are any, are there to bring solar energy plants and other environmentally sound industries to areas that have the worst poverty right now, such as Appalachia, those areas that are forming mining communities, and cities like Detroit and the other cities that have such big unemployment?
So you're asking, I think, two separate but really important questions. One about more rural communities and one about more urban communities, but with kind of the overarching imperative of what we need to be doing to kind of address poverty where poverty exists. And I should have said up front, I'm deeply biased towards my mom. And I own that, and I don't apologize for it. And my mom has both a comprehensive agenda for investing in rural America, as well as an urban agenda. So just kind of talking about the jobs component, one, absolutely. I mean, we need to be investing in coal country and in places where kind of jobs have slowly disappeared as the industry has waned. We also need to honor the labor of coal miners and their families and protect their pensions. But we need to be building solar panel factories exactly in those places, and something that my mom has in great detail kind of on her website, so I hope that you'll look at that. And then similarly, on the urban agenda, encouraging more kind of rejuvenation through our tax code, similar to what is starting to happen in Detroit, in that, you know, over the last couple of years, jobs are growing again in Detroit, so we know that it is possible because we are seeing it happen. And my mom kind of has this old-fashioned idea that we should learn from what works and what has and look at the evidence. And so we should be kind of continuing to accelerate progress in places like Detroit, and then look at the mix of kind of public-private investments that have really started to make a difference in Detroit. And Detroit's deployed a kind of particular density strategy where they've made targeted investments truly in kind of certain blocks so that there is a multiplier effect, and kind of then what we should be doing to help support other states and cities that aren't yet creating opportunities for their people. And it also relates a lot to education, and I can talk about that if people are curious too. So thank you for your question. Oh gosh, on this side, yes.
Hi.
It's a totally unscientific, like this side in the middle.
Yes, my name is Drew Jones with Climate Interactive. And as we all know, clean energy is soaring right now. And you and your family have been a big part of that for many decades. And the next President Clinton, of course, will make that happen in a much bigger way. And that's why we love her. Don't we love her, everybody?
Thank you.
You're in Climate Town, and so I have to ask the question about the second half of the climate challenge, which is keeping coal, oil, and gas in the ground. So my question is, what do you think the next President Clinton's administration is going to do to stand up to big coal, big oil, and big gas?
So thank you for your question. I think what someone has done and has stood up for and also stood up against and has fought for and fought against is a good barometer of what they'll stand for and fight for and stand against and fight against in the future. And when my mom was a senator, she fought against the repeated efforts to open the Arctic Wildlife Refuge to drilling. And that was at different points in her career in the Senate, sometimes relatively easier and sometimes actually quite politically challenging. And so I think that that demonstrates her commitment to protecting our natural resources. And I think President Obama's kind of commitment as seen in preserving more land than any president ever, kind of one of the many things I think he doesn't get enough credit for, that he has preserved and protected more land even than Theodore Roosevelt, sets a good template for what we should be doing to both protect our natural resources and ensure that kind of energy that we don't need stays underground, while recognizing that we do need a transition and being candid about that to clean energy so that people's energy bills don't skyrocket. But the transition should not be an excuse for any more drilling than we need. So thank you. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yes, ma'am, in the black T-shirt. Oh, wow, I haven't seen that T-shirt yet.
Thanks. The question I have is, everybody please forgive me if I'm out of date and don't know the latest information, but I know over the years that the TVA and the Ohio Valley have polluted our beautiful Smoky Mountains and our air over here. Even though they look lovely, they're getting more and more polluted. And we're just wondering what kind of ideas does she have to protect it that way from, you know, crossing. The pollution crosses states. There's nothing we can do about what they decide to do. What kind of ideas does she have about those kinds of issues?
So I don't know the answer to your specific question about the TVA and the Ohio Valley Authority. But I do know when my mom was my senator from New York, this was a real challenge for us in New York because we had a lot of pollution coming from Ohio across to New York. And I know that it's something that she not only kind of raised awareness on, but pushed efforts, which were largely unsuccessful, candidly, but pushed efforts in the Senate to both enable kind of the whole universe of those who are affected by pollution originating in one state to have a say in sort of new power plants or retrofits so that kind of it wasn't just Ohio who should be determining kind of these questions if the pollution was traveling as it was kind of into New York, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere. So she certainly agrees there should be a community approach, and she kind of has that strong record from when she was a senator. But I don't know the exact answer to your question, but I am sure there is an exact answer to your question. So if you come up to me afterwards and give me your email, or there's Stephen right there. If you talk to Stephen right there, no, Stephen, oh, maybe the man standing next to you's name is Stephen too, but that man right there in the blue vest, his name is Stephen. And if you give him your email, we will get back to you. And I think it's always important to be honest about what I don't know, and I don't know the answer to that specific question, but I hope you'll look at my mom's record as a senator from New York for what she tried to do for us as New Yorkers. Oh, yes.
Oh, here, I can lend you mine. Great, thank you. My name is Amanda Reisers. I'm with Acclimatize, which is one of the companies working here in the Collider. And we work with climate adaptation, which is the focus of my question. So often climate change is discussed in terms of mitigation, reducing carbon emissions, and so forth. But with the impact of climate change, we know that we're locked into a certain degree of climate change at this point. And as a result, there will be consequences to that, to America. So I wanted to touch on the issue of adaptation and see whether Hillary has any plans for how to address climate adaptation. And when you mentioned the point about the bridges in the U.S., you know, Corps of Engineers, it made me think that these bridges, which could be fixed existingly, I mean, by 2030, that's another 15 years of exposure to extreme precipitation, higher temperatures, potentially increased frequency, severity of storms. So, around the issue of both infrastructure and policies in the country, does Hillary have a plan for adaptation?
Far over so I don't fall off the stage. Thank you for your question. Although I'm sure all of you know this, Mr. Trump has called climate change a hoax started by the Chinese or other people at various points in time, because of the extreme weather events that we are increasingly witnessing, including most recently in Louisiana, this may not be something that you're experiencing here in North Carolina, but increasingly at the state level across the country, there is growing bipartisan consensus that we need to do more exactly in this area, that we need to kind of adapt kind of how we think about our communities, our infrastructure, and be candid about our vulnerabilities as storm seasons lengthen and storms get more extreme and as flooding gets more extreme, for all the reasons that the scientists in the room know far better than I do. And so my mom thinks the federal government needs to be a strong partner in those efforts because, candidly, local communities will know more what they need than the federal government will in terms of what storm responses, bless you, and it's a reaction from growing up in Arkansas. And so working with local communities and states and making federal funding available as part of that, and ensuring the Army Corps of Engineers and the others that should be part of that conversation are embedded into that, but also recognizing that we want to put communities at the center of those decisions. And thankfully, for those of us who kind of are self-identified progressives and unapologetically kind of Democrats and liberals who often feel like we are on kind of one side of the debate alone, that's increasingly not true. Because of what's happening around the country. And so I hope that we will make progress on that, even if we have to make progress while calling it something else besides climate change adaptation. Yes, in the orange shirt, right there. And what's your name?
Brody.
Brody, and how old are you?
11.
11. So what grade does that put you in?
Fifth.
Fifth grade, okay.
I was wondering, what are the other things that we could start doing to help the other countries around the world start trying to prevent more climate change as well?
Well, Brody, thank you for your question. And thank you for already having such a global view at 11. And thank you for feeling a sense of kind of global community and responsibility. So I hope that your representative of your friends, he's nodding, he thinks he is, because that I think is something we all should feel really optimistic about. Please. Feel free to applaud a lot for Brody. But you ask a serious question, and I would say a few things. One, it's really important that the United States meets its obligation to the Paris Climate Accord. Yeah. And it's really important because it's important to help us kind of mitigate and ameliorate whatever we can for climate change. And we have to play a real role in that because we've played a role in getting us here. But it's also important because if we want other countries, the countries who are having different experiences than the one that the commissioner mentioned in terms of our fastest growing power source being from solar energy, that's not true in a lot of other countries where it is coal and natural gas and oil. If we want other countries to meet their Paris obligations, we have to meet our Paris obligation. We can't
expect other countries to abide by an agreement that we don't abide by. So that, I think, is the first part. The second part is, I think we also have to kind of continue President Obama's commitments, particularly kind of through his efforts in partnership with the State Department and USAID to invest in renewable energy across Africa. And that's also really important because it is quite literally an empowering investment in helping kind of people build schools and businesses to kind of foster their own ingenuity and innovation. It's very hard to kind of have a business if you can only operate when the sun is out. It's very hard to kind of have a school if it can only be open kind of when the weather is good and the sun is out. And because how USAID, which is the part of the State Department and the government that kind of invests foreign aid, part of what they're trying to do is to partner with local renewable energy entrepreneurs and companies. So if we do that, hopefully we're making an investment in many ways in the future of kind of people your age, kind of throughout sub-Saharan Africa, and also in the future of our planet. So we have a lot to do, but those are just two examples of what I think we must do. Please give Brody another round of applause. I'm so happy you asked a question, Brody. Thank you. Other questions? Oh, gosh. Yes, sir, in the back in the glasses.
Team supported in the Democratic platform putting a price on carbon, and most economists would say that that is the most effective way to move us to a clean energy economy. And I realize sometimes politics, you may think that that's not the way to go, but there may be some movements that would move us toward getting bipartisan support for putting a price on carbon. And I would just ask if your mom will support that if it comes out that there might be a possibility in Congress for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your question. You know, I think we'll see what happens after this election. I mean, before we had 17 people running for president on the Republican side, we actually were moving toward a bipartisan consensus on a few areas. I mean, we were really moving towards comprehensive immigration reform. Back in 2014, I know that sounds like a lifetime ago now, we were moving toward at least the recognition that we needed to have criminal justice reform. We were moving toward the recognition that we needed to have real student loan reform. We were moving toward the recognition that we needed more infrastructure investments. I mean, you wouldn't know that if you listened to the Republican primary, and certainly not if you listened to Mr. Trump. But I say that because I hope, after my mom wins, knock on wood, that we will kind of get back to a place of listening to experts in this area and so many others, and reminding people on both sides of the aisle of things they said and commitments they made not that long ago, kind of in those areas and others. So thank you. Oh gosh, yes ma'am, in the red. Yes ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Oh, sorry. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
You. Thank sorry. You. Red. I realize you're wearing a red shirt and then a red and white shirt over it.
Hi.
Plaid. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Marie Pickle, and I moved here 2.5 years ago to Asheville from Flagstaff, Arizona, which is another mountain town that is a very community, environmental stronghold. So my question to you, and it's a multi-layer question, and I know there's no simple answer to it. So it seems to me that last week a lot of people here in town were like freaking out because there was no gas available due to that pipeline spill in Alabama. And I'm old enough to remember when there were gas lines during the Carter administration. I think gas was like 60 cents a gallon then. And a couple years ago when I lived in Flag, it was $3, $4, $5 going on $6 in California. We remember those days. So unfortunately now, I think most people just don't give a frack about where the gas comes
I've never heard that before.
They don't give a frack. And I'm really worried about this fracking, and I think that there's certain people that are standing up for that and are standing up for what we believe in. But until that happens, how, except for with people like Brody, do you get that mentality to change where it's important to me how much I spend at the gas pump. I don't care where it comes from. I don't care if my car gets 8 miles a gallon. I'm really tough in my car. How do you eventually get people to come around and to, like, get it all of a sudden, you know? Because we have one planet, we have finite resources, and it doesn't take a rocket science to figure that out. So I don't know what my question is and all
that's
of that,
okay.
But
so I think, well, I think you're asking a few questions.
Yes, like I said, it's multi-layered, and there's no simple answer, but I give a frack.
And I'm going to remember that. I can quote you, yes, ma'am, but I'll give you due attribution, don't worry. So I think you're asking a couple of questions. You know, one of the reasons we need kind of the federal government to continue to play and play an even larger role in moving us toward renewable energy is I don't think we can expect people to pay more at the gas pump. And I don't think we should expect people to act against their economic self-interest, particularly not when incomes for so many Americans in real terms haven't gone up in 15 years. Now, we also need to invest in creating more jobs and raise the minimum wage and raise incomes, because that's an important part of this conversation as well. But I think we have to be candid and respectful about that dynamic. I think, though, that to me just says we have no time to lose, because we want it to be in people's immediate and long-term self-interest in the best sense to be kind of fueling their cars, their homes, their workplaces, their churches, their community centers, kind of everything from renewable energy sources. We have to help make that a reality. And the second part, I think, does relate to education. I think one of the reasons Brody asked this question is probably he has parents, grandparents, adulties around who kind of talk to him about kind of what's happening in the world. But he may also be learning about this in school. And there are a lot of kids around the country who aren't learning about this in school. And so we need to change that so that students are learning about kind of climate change and the challenges of climate change, almost irrespective of kind of anything else that they might be learning in science class, because this is an urgent existential threat for our country. And we also need to be encouraging people like Brody in the same way, thankfully, I was encouraged as a kid to feel empowered, right? I mean, Brody might invent the next solar cell at 11, but he might not, and that's okay. But he can absolutely raise awareness with his friends and his family. He can absolutely recycle. He can absolutely show up at events like this and ask questions. And I think we want to encourage that level of citizen engagement from a young age, which also then kind of bridges into kind of the last point I'll make, is that we need to help kids, young people, all of us really understand kind of what different levels of governments can do. Kind of back to my praise of your mayor and your county commissioner, in that we all need to be part of this, and I want Brody and his friends to kind of be showing up at events like this kind of for the mayor and the county commissioner too, asking these questions. But we have to accelerate our move to a clean energy economy, because it must be in people's self-interest in the best sense, kind of for today and the long term.
But it has to be before the next generation.
I totally agree with that. It's why we have to elect my mom. One of the many reasons. Oh gosh, last question. Oh my gosh, yes, sir, because you're wearing your tie and you look so happy. Yes, sir.
I'm a CEO of a company called Phytonics Corporation. I just want to add to the conversation and then ask a question. Phytonics is a biotech company that's working on carbon dioxide utilization technologies. There are really two components to addressing and tackling climate change. One being clean energy, reducing emissions, solar panels. The other being actually using all of the carbon. Carbon is the building block for chemicals and fuels and everything. That's currently made mostly with petroleum. Carbon dioxide utilization technologies, it's the green concrete, the carbon negative concrete. There's biological technologies, like we're working on a photosynthetic technology which makes chemicals out of carbon dioxide. So carbon tax is one potential solution that provides an incentive for this. I was at the Department of Energy. They had in December, they had their first workshop ever on carbon dioxide utilization, getting away from sequestration, just putting it in the ground. So this is a growing field, lots of new technologies, and it actually converts carbon dioxide to other things and it disappears. So how we're that's the other piece, and so how would President Hillary Clinton provide incentives for carbon dioxide utilization? Or actually, I just want to make it, you know, make people aware that that's another piece of the puzzle. There's going to be a lot of emissions for a long time still, so we and other companies hook up to these emissions and actually convert them to useful things and eliminate the carbon dioxide. How are we going to promote and
that's
it.
Thank you for sharing about your work. I didn't realize it had advanced so significantly. And I'm so grateful that you stood up and shared that with all of us and with me in particular. So I have a very kind of simple answer to your question is that my mom thinks the federal government, either singularly or in partnership, should learn from the XPRIZE model, and that we should be kind of investing in kind of XPRIZE incentives for entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs, kind of business entrepreneurs, kind of public-private partnerships in specific areas where there clearly is demonstrated potential, but with just that much more attention, there could be kind of exponential development and growth. And so it's part of her clean energy prize, clean energy plan, sort of the XPRIZE model. And she kind of thinks if we invest about $60 billion over 10 years kind of through this and other incentive mechanisms, but real money to really kind of galvanize progress, hopefully, you know, we'll all benefit and we'll all kind of hopefully grow up and work for Brody someday. So, thank you. I know we're out of time. I just am incredibly grateful that you took time out of your day-to-day to be with me. I hope you'll make sure everyone you know is registered to vote and everyone either votes early here in North Carolina starting October 20th or on Election Day. Thank you so much, and once again, thank you to the Collider. Thank you.